So we're looking at the values because as a church, we want to be a church that's driven by our values. We want to say this is kind of what makes us us. This, it's not that we've arrived. It's not that we're perfect in any of these, but these are what we want to be true of us. And if they're going to be values that mean anything to us, then they need to be things that we think about, pray about, have on our minds, and so on. So we want you to take a card and have this list available in your Bible or on your fridge or wherever you put important things. And, you know, you can pray through them, think about them. You can evaluate if you're involved in a ministry here at Trinity, if you're teaching in one of the kids' club groups or whatever, if you're involved in stuff at the church, look at the values and say, are we living up to these values? Because this is what we want to be true of us. Okay, so today we're looking at number 10, and last week we looked at number 9, and next week number 11. There's a pattern. I'll let you figure out what the pattern is. But last week we thought about showing God's compassionate care for the weak and broken. And this week and next week, we're sort of thinking about, in a sense, two sides of a coin. We're thinking about next week, us going out. We want to be a church of people that when we disperse to tell people about Jesus because we're so convinced that Jesus is so wonderful, who he is and what he's done is so important that people need to know him. It's the only hope, right? It's the only thing that's going to make a difference. And so next week, we're going to think about, Andy's going to be speaking, thinking about reaching beyond ourselves in local and global mission. So whether we go across the road to a neighbor or across the planet, we want to be doing that on mission, taking the message of Jesus. But today, we're thinking about number 10. And number 10 says this, it's about creating attractive and safe environments for people to encounter Christ. Creating attractive and safe environments for people to encounter Christ. Effectively, next week is about us going out, and this week is about the reality that usually people come in here. Now, you might not kind of notice that as much as we do as leaders, but most weeks, and this is an exception, but most weeks, we have guests. Most weeks we have people who are visiting. They've maybe seen the website, maybe come with a friend, maybe come with family. But it's a wonderful thing. And we love that. We like that. We want to be a church where people come. And in coming to church, we want them to encounter Christ. Because that's the most important thing. And so what I'm going to do this afternoon is take us to a passage that kind of gives us a principle that drives that value. Okay, so we're going to look at a passage, we're going to get this principle, take a little bit of understanding to get it, we'll get the principle, and then we'll think about that principle for us as individuals, and then for us as a church. Okay, so that's the plan. I'll kind of lead you through it. So we're going to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And if anyone finds it in a church Bible and wants to give me the page number, that'd be super helpful. 956. Thank you, Adam. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, which is on page 956. And this, we're not going to go into all the detail of this passage, but it's a fascinating passage to look at. It's written by Paul. Paul was a Jew who became a follower of Jesus. To begin with, he hated the followers of Jesus and persecuted them. But then he met the risen Christ, and that changed everything for him. And so Paul became really the kind of the pioneer missionary. He was the one that took the message of Jesus to new places. And we get to read his story for a lot of the New Testament. We read the book of Acts. A lot of it is about Paul. Three great missionary journeys that he went on, taking the gospel to new places and introducing people to Jesus and seeing churches started. And we read 13 of his letters. And these letters are letters that he wrote to churches or individuals that kind of follow up his visits or respond to questions or whatever the situation is. And 1 Corinthians is a letter that Paul wrote during his third journey. So he's already been traveling for years. He's already been planting churches for several years. He's seen lives transformed. He's seeing a lot of good things happening. But when he writes to the Corinthians, there's several points in the letter where he's obviously defending himself and the way that he works. There were a lot of people that criticized, that said that Paul is not impressive, or Paul's not doing things the right way. He's not living up to our expectations. And so at various points in his letter, he's kind of explaining, okay, this is why I do what I do, which is really useful for us. Because 2,000 years later, we're kind of trying to do what he did. And so we can learn from his explanation. So I just want you to notice a couple of things. First of all, notice verse 12. We're going to focus in on just a few verses, but I just want you to see verse 12, kind of middle of the verse where it starts a new paragraph. You'll see the word nevertheless. He says, nevertheless, we have not made use of this right. So the right he's talking about there is the right to receive money from the people that he's ministering to. And he's chosen not to receive money because he doesn't want to confuse anyone about the free nature of the gospel. He wants them to realize that it's not something that you can pay for, something that you can earn. It's a gift that God gives. And so he's chosen to not do something that he had every right to do. Okay? And he says this, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. That's quite a statement, isn't it? We'll endure anything, any discomfort, any abuse of rights, and anything. We'll endure anything because we don't want there to be any obstacle to the gospel. We want the message of Jesus, who he is and what he's done, to get to people that need him. And we don't want to put barriers in the way. And so we'll endure all sorts of hardships. We'll endure all sorts of difficulties, all sorts of inconveniences. We'll endure all sorts of suffering even because we're so committed to the gospel getting to people that's what it takes. That's what it takes. We'll do it. It's got a passion for people to know Jesus. You drop down a few more verses. Verse 16, again, second half of the verse. He says, or the end of the verse, woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. Paul was a man absolutely gripped with a passion for telling people about Jesus. He'd gone from being a persecutor of Christians, someone who was out to destroy the church, but once he met Christ and discovered who Jesus was and discovered that actually when Jesus died, that was God's plan and Jesus died in our place, and so it's now possible for us to have our sins forgiven, have our shame lifted, have ourselves embraced into the family of God, to have a future and a present and just for everything, for transformation. All of these realities of the gospel, Paul said, that's it, I am living for that. And I will do whatever it takes. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. So you can see he's got a passion, right? A passion for people to know Jesus. And then we come down to verse 19. And it's this paragraph that gives us the principle that underlies the value that we're talking about today. Okay, so let me read these verses and then we'll make sense of them, hopefully together. Verse 19, Paul says, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Verse 22 feels like the big point, doesn't it? I have become all things to all people that by all means I might save some. It's clear as you read this, it is a complicated paragraph, but it's clear that Paul's passion is for people who don't know Jesus to be introduced to Jesus, right? That people are lost, that people have no hope, they've got a terrible, dire future unless they're introduced to Jesus, unless they come to the point of trusting him and accepting the gift of life that he has to offer. And so people are in this dire situation and Paul's saying, I want to win them. I want to win them to Jesus. I want them to encounter Christ. But then there's some complexity in this. Notice, first of all, that he talks about Jews and Gentiles, people under the law and people outside the law. That just takes a little bit of kind of getting our heads around to understand that. Paul grew up as a Jew. And the Jewish faith, the Jewish religion, was kind of or became dominated and focused on law. Kind of religious ritual and kind of rules and regulations. And of course, those were given initially by God in order to kind of guard the nation of Israel and prepare them for Jesus. But here's Paul after Jesus, and they've missed Jesus, and they're just kind of focused on the rules. And so for the Jewish people, law was the big deal. What can you do on this day? What can't you do on the seventh day? Where can you go? How much can you travel? What should you wear? What should your clothes be made out of? There were a whole host of laws, some of them from the Old Testament, some of them that had been added. And so for the Jews, that was life. In contrast, the non-Jews or the Gentiles, they didn't have any of that. They could go where they wanted, whenever they wanted, travel as far as they wanted, wear whatever they wanted or not wanted. They were free. And so you've got these two very different groups of people. And in Paul's world, practically everywhere he went had a Jewish community and a non-Jewish community. Now, for Paul himself, he had grown up a Jew. He'd grown up keeping the rules. He was the best rule keeper in the entire Jewish religion. And then he met Jesus and discovered that keeping the rules wasn't going to get him saved. He needed to believe and trust in Jesus. So Jesus led him out of that. In fact, for Paul to go back and place himself under those rules and to put the focus back on himself would have been a great sin. It would have been an offense to what Jesus did. It would be like saying the cross was not good enough to deal with sin. I've got to put in my effort. And so if you read Galatians, Paul is absolutely clear. No way should we put ourselves under the law. We're free of that in Christ. And yet Paul says in verse 20, to the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law that I might win those under the law. What Paul's saying is that when he wanted to approach people that were living under those religious kind of restrictions and regulations, what would he do? He would put on his Jewish clothes and he would go in and he was a rabbi, he was qualified, he could totally do that. Legitimately say, yeah, I'm as Jewish as you are. And, you know, he could be absolutely Jewish in terms of his culture. And he could say, right, it's the Sabbath. No, I'm not going to work because I want to have an audience with you. I want you to listen to me and I don't want you to discount me. So I'm going to restrict what I do. I'm going to choose to not use the freedoms that I have because I want to get close to the Jews in order to tell them about Jesus. That's different than putting yourself under the law in the kind of I need to do this to get saved sense. It's for them to get saved, I'm going to get close. And so Paul wouldn't walk into a synagogue, you know, dressed like the Fonz or whatever and go, hey, I've got all sorts of freedom, check me out. He would come in as a Jew among Jews with the restrictions they had in a way that wouldn't cause an offense and get them confused or upset, do whatever it takes to get close. But notice what he says in brackets in the passage there in verse 20, though not being myself under the law. He knew and he was clear, I'm not under the law. I don't have to keep these rules. I'm not obligated to do this. But because I love these people, I'll do it for their sake. But what about the people outside the law? Well, next verse. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law in order to win those outside the law. What does that mean? Well, if he was around Gentiles who didn't have the dietary restrictions and the working on Sabbath restrictions and the, you know, mixing of cloth restrictions and all the restrictions that the Jews had, if he was going to get near to the Gentiles, he would go with them, go to their restaurants, eat their food, be with them, you know, hang out with them, not in any way to sin. Notice he puts it in brackets again here, doesn't he? It's the same kind of statement. Verse 21, not being outside the law of God, that is, not going wild and sinning, but under the law of Christ. He was gripped by what Jesus had taught, that we are to love God and love your neighbor. And if you do that, you'll fulfill the whole righteous requirement of the law. So Paul, with loving God and loving neighbor, go and be with the Gentiles in order to win them. All things to all people, that by all means he might save some. That's the principle. It's a principle of proximity, that if unless we can get close to people, we've got no way to offer them the hope of Jesus. We can't stand at a distance and lob truth grenades at people as they go past on their way to somewhere else. We've got to get alongside them. And I suppose what that means for us individually is a couple of things. It means that for some of us, we need to be deliberate about getting close to people. For some of us, we hang out with Christians, go to church, plan church stuff, execute church stuff, and think about church stuff while we're preparing to prepare for more church stuff. And if we're not careful, you know, we can very quickly find a Christian hairdresser and a Christian doctor and a Christian mechanic, and before we know it, a Christian golf professional, obviously, and before we know it, we can only ever meet with Christians. But that's not what Paul says here. That's not what Jesus was like. He was known as what? The friend of sinners. He was able to get alongside people. People who were nothing like Jesus really, really liked Jesus. And we're the body of Christ. And so as individuals, we need to be alongside people. So for some of us, the move we need to make is to get alongside people. When Melanie and I were first married, we thought about this and we decided to take a Spanish class. It was hilarious. It wasn't necessarily the most evangelistically fruitful thing we've ever done. But we did that purely because we wanted to get alongside some people that weren't from church. When we moved back to England in 2004, one of the first things I did was to find a sports class that I could get plugged into to get alongside people. And I've been doing that every week, more or less, for 14 years, to get alongside people in order to befriend people that aren't here in church. And so for some of us who don't naturally have work and family and whatever, some of us need to take a step to just get alongside some people. Join a class, join a knitting circle, basket weaving, whatever it takes. Get alongside people so that you have the chance to point them to Jesus. For others of us, maybe that's already in place. Work, neighbors, family, maybe you can't seem to get away from people that don't know Jesus. But perhaps you're struggling with having something to say. With having kind of the boldness and the courage to actually point them to Jesus. Whether it's the proximity that we need to kind of lean into and pray about, or whether it's the having something that's bubbling out of us that we've just got to tell people, I think practically for every one of us as individuals, there's stuff that maybe we should do, pray about and move towards. Practical things to think through. How can I get alongside people and how can I point them to Jesus? How can I have something that I'm so passionate about that I can't help but talk about it? And so that's the principle, that we want to be as people, as followers of Jesus, we want to be those who become all things to all men, that by all means, except sin, we might win some. That's basically what Paul's saying in this passage. Do anything except sin to reach people. There's one line in there that I'm not going to go into detail about. He mentions the weak. To those who are weak, I became weak so as to win the weak. Weak there doesn't mean kind of, you know, physically tired, although that's, you know, a definite category in our culture. It's talking about people who have a weak conscience, people who through their upbringing, through their church background or something, they've got all sorts of extra burdens. And then things that the Bible never says are wrong, if they did it, for them it would mean guiltiness, that guilt feeling. For them it's a thing that would cause a problem. That's a whole subject that I wish we could go into for a whole week and just think about that. That actually for a lot of people in church world, when they read in 1 Corinthians 8, 9, 10, and in Romans 13, 14, when Paul's talking about the weak and the strong, there's a lot of people in church world that say, well, I'm strong, when actually they're weak. Because the weak, by definition, are people who are susceptible or temptable to do something that they will then feel guilty about that isn't in itself wrong. It's a whole load of issues that would fall into that neutral category. Places where you might go, the cinema or the pub or whatever, things you might do, drink alcohol or play card games or whatever. There's all sorts of things that for some people, because of their background, dancing, another one, all sorts of things that for some people, if they were to do that, they would feel so guilty, like they'd sinned against God. That's what it is to be weak. And Paul says, yeah, I'm willing to restrict myself to get alongside people in that category in order to win them, but it's actually better to be strong, to have a conscience that isn't tripping up over every little neutral thing that you know, has come down to us. And for some of us in the room, that's really tough. You've grown up in a Christian family, in a Christian church. Maybe the rules are still kind of clinging on, some things that aren't really in here. I remember for me, when we moved to America, going from church to a restaurant on a Sunday was tough, because in this country we kept Sunday special back in those days, and it was a thing. And I had to go back to my Bible and go, is this allowed? Can I go to this restaurant? Can I have pizza served by somebody else on a Sunday? Can I go into the shop and get something on a Sunday? And I had to process that and discover, actually, you know what? I don't think that's a sin in and of itself. And because of that, I'm able to get alongside people that I could never get alongside otherwise. Like this morning when I was being a linesman for a football match and then spent half an hour chatting to two coaches afterwards. That was not an option if I'm restricted by something that technically is not a sin. Now, that's a whole subject that we could go into. But I want us just to churn that a little bit in our thinking and say, okay, just me as an individual, if I love Jesus, how can I get alongside people so that I can point them to Jesus? What do I need to do? Do I need to do something to get alongside them, or do I need some help in being more bold? What is it that would be helpful for me? But take that principle and then bring it to the church. Because what we're talking about with Value 10, creating safe and attractive environments for people to encounter Christ, is kind of an application of this value. That is, as a church, we said from the beginning, we want church to be as obstacle-free as possible. Right, we don't want to create a church that has a whole load of kind of awkwardnesses and difficulties and kind of cultural things that feel awkward to an outsider. We want it to be the case that if somebody comes to church, they feel comfortable. Right? And so we don't want to make this a club for ourselves. We don't want to make this kind of an in-house thing. We want this to be an environment where somebody comes off the street and into church. They discover, wow, these people love each other. Wow, I feel love. Wow, this God is amazing. Wow. And we want them to encounter Christ. And so that's been the value that has kind of gone into, or the principle that's gone into this value of creating safe and attractive environments. So 15 years ago, I was at Bible school and we were in class one week, and the teacher said, before next week, you have got to go to a religious service and it cannot be Christian. He said, which ones do you want? You got to pick now. And I kind of hesitate with menus in restaurants, and I had a restaurant moment. We were in a restaurant, bizarrely, but that's another story. And I kind of froze, and someone took JW, and someone took Mormon, and somebody took the mosque, and you know, they were all gone. And I was like, what's left? And he looked around, and he said, a Buddhist. I was like, okay, I'll do a Buddhist then. So I had to look it up. Where's a Buddhist temple? When's the service? Is there a service? What's it? And I remember pulling up in the car, kind of swallowing, gulping hard, and walking in and just feeling completely out of my element. What do I do? Where do I go? How does this work? In the end, I got a tour from a monk, because they don't do services, and this monk gave me a tour. We had a lovely chat. He offered me some food. I declined. It was this whole kind of thing for about an hour, hour and a half. It was fascinating. And then we came back to class the following week, and he said, okay, let's talk about it. How was the Buddhist temple, Peter? And I told him. How was the Mormon service? How was the JW? What about you in the mosque? You know, and we went round, and he said, okay, every one of you felt uncomfortable, didn't you? Very much. He said, I want you to remember that feeling. Because that's how people feel when they come into your church. It's weird. Like, frankly, it's weird, right? Like, what's happening? Why are we singing? Like, what's going on? Like, where, should I sit? Should I stand? You know, do I have to pay for the refreshments? What? How does this all work? And for us, it's so easy to forget because it's normal. This is as normal for us as you know, going home and making a cup of tea. It's just normal. But for somebody who says, I'm going to church, they probably swallow hard before they come near this place. So we want to think about that. And we want to create a safe and attractive environment where people come in and don't get tripped up because they feel awkward. That's why we left the Olympiad, because we didn't have space. We didn't have enough chairs. We didn't want someone coming in and going, I don't know where to sit. Oh, this is awful. And then going. We left because we had children that had to kind of go up and around and into this area. And it's kind of like, oh, that's not ideal, you know? The experience of the children is so significant for visitors. And that's why we chose to meet here. That's why when you come into the car park, you'll notice there are 4 visitor parking spaces because we want it to be as easy as possible. Now, today, I understand we had, you know, a thing going on and mud everywhere. And so I know that technically there are 4 cars in those spaces that are not visitors. But normally, we like to guard the visitor parking spaces, right? Normally, we kind of try to keep the top part of the other side clear for any older folks that struggle to climb the hill. And actually, we can park down here across the tennis courts and just kind of walk that way to make it as easy as possible. We like to have someone there in a yellow jacket to welcome people so that they know where to go. We like to have people to greet and to welcome and to bring people in and to say, you know, refreshments are free. Help yourself. Have anything, you know, we're glad you're here. Hey, let me introduce you to someone. We're trying to make it, and we're not succeeding perfectly, but we're trying to make it a church where if somebody comes, they go, huh, that felt good. And if they have children, then we want to have the children getting signed in, and we want them to see that we take children's safety absolutely, you know, to the nth degree seriously. We want to introduce them to the people that are leading the kids. Like, this is the person that's going to be responsible for your child during the service. You can go out and see where they are. You know, we do all these kinds of things, not just because it's sort of something to do, but because we don't want this to be a club for ourselves. We want this to be a church that's safe and attractive. And if, by the way, you have any skill in making an environment attractive, go for it. We want to, you know, some people, no offense, some people can live in an absolute pigsty and never notice it, but some people notice it. And if you're the kind of person that notices, oh, that's a bit messy, or that could be done better, or maybe we should put some flowers here, or what about this? Or we'd love those skills to be used and to come out, because we want this place to not just become as comfortable as the weird furniture that you've got hidden in your den. We want this to be the best, most loving, welcoming environment possible for someone who's coming to church and doesn't really know what's going on. Why? Because they're not coming here to experience the pleasure of coming here. They're coming here to meet Jesus. And that's why for us as a church, we want to do whatever we can. If we run a 3-2-1 course, we want to run it in an attractive environment. If we do kids stuff, we want it to be in an attractive environment. If we do anything, we want it to be safe. We want it to be attractive. We want people, basically, like we've said before in the past, I remember one of the other guys who's on the startup team used to say, we only want people tripping up over 2 things, Christians loving each other and the gospel. Nothing else. We don't want them tripping up over how do you find that reference. That's why we always give the page number. We don't want them tripping up over, oh, I didn't bring a Bible. That's why we have Bibles available. We don't want people tripping up over anything and feeling awkward about anything, because actually there are people that experience something negative in church world and they're gone. Now, if somebody comes and they hear about Jesus and they hear about how much God loves them and how Jesus has died on the cross for them and how he wants to welcome them into God's family and he's willing to forgive their sins and lift their shame and embrace them and the whole gospel is presented and all it takes is for them to humble themselves and receive the offer of life and put their trust in him instead of themselves. If they hear that and say, oh, no, thank you, I'm working for it. There's nothing we can do about that. But what a tragedy if someone comes to church and it doesn't feel friendly and they never come again. Or what if they come to church and have a bad experience of something or you know, they, I don't know, the kids find a half-eaten hot dog and chew on it and get sick. I mean, whatever. We want to do whatever it takes to make church a safe and an attractive environment. And I have to say, well done, because we do an awful lot. A lot of people put a lot of work in to make that the case. But I want you to understand why. The reason why is not because we're trying to get some friendly church award. It's because we want people to meet Jesus. We had a few weeks before we launched Trinity, a few weeks where a group of us had kind of pulled out of another church, and we hadn't started meeting as Trinity. We were just meeting as a prayer meeting at that stage. And we said, let's go visit some other churches. That was fascinating for us. Maybe you've done that on holiday, go to visit another church. When you do that, any good ideas, feed them to us. We're always ready to learn. But for 5, 6, 7 weeks, we were going to different churches. And for me, it was fascinating because I've been to hundreds of church services in different churches, but usually I'm the preacher. When you're the preacher, they treat you like royalty sometimes. And so it's, you know, you don't really know what a church is like, but to go as a complete guest, it wasn't quite as bad as the Buddhist temple. But there were one or two places that were somewhat similar in awkwardness. Had to find your way in, had to figure out what was going on, no one spoke to you. We said, okay. And one thing, several families did it, and when we came back and we discussed how are we going to do Trinity, the one thing that came out from everyone was, we want this to be a friendly church. Because it doesn't make sense to be anything but. If God is so good and the gospel is such good news, we want to be a church that's as friendly as God is good, or at least we want to try. And so that's why we do what we do. It's because of this principle that we don't want anything to be an obstacle to the gospel. We want people to encounter Christ. And so I want to encourage you in whatever area of ministry you're involved in at Trinity, be encouraged. It's important. If you're on the welcome team, critical role. If you're on refreshments, it's a critical role. If you're in here just meeting and talking to people, it's a critical role. If you're involved in anything to do with children, it's an uber critical role. Because what do families evaluate a church by? I tell you, if they come to church and their kids don't like it, or they don't feel like their kids are safe, they're not coming back. But if their kids enjoy it, if their kids get in the car and say, Mom, Dad, let's go again, then they'll be back whether they want to be or not. Because children have that kind of influence. And so we want to do whatever we can. And I want to encourage you, whatever you're involved in, even if it's nothing formal, even if it's just, oh, here's somebody new. Hey, my name's, what's your, you know, it's critical. It really is important. And so as we head into this year, let's kind of lean into this value and say, okay, Lord, let's do this. Renewed strength, renewed energy. Let's give it the best that we can. You know, the refreshments, let's be lavish. Welcome team, let's be friendly. Whatever we can do, let's do it. Because not that that's an end in itself, but because Jesus is worth it. And people need to know him. I suppose to finish the message, it seems so obvious, but it's so important. If we're talking about getting out of our comfort zone in order to get alongside people and tell them about Jesus, if we're talking about doing church more, in a sense, more for guests than for us, not to say that us is not super important, there's five values about loving one another, but to say that we want to do things that are deliberately guest-focused, what drives that? How can we find the motivation for that? By the way, some of you remember this. In the first few months when we started meeting, first few months of 2014, I remember distinctly this happened week by week. We would always introduce the service the same way. Welcome to Trinity Chippenham. My name is Peter. I'm glad that you're here. I'm one of the leaders, or what we used to call ourselves, a startup team. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Literally every time. We had maybe 20 people in the room, and they kind of look around like this. I could see the eyes going. Doesn't he realize we haven't got any guests in? And I had it, Dave had it, you know, all the people, Andy. Whenever we introduced, we'd introduce as if there was a guest there. And people were like, there's no guest. But we did it deliberately because we want to be a church that's guest friendly. So we just did it. We just did it to become a part of our habit, to become a part of our culture, to try to get us to trust the church. How can we go, instead of starting from scratch to being almost 5 years old as a church, how can we say, okay, we want this value to drive us even more? I'll tell you how. We go back to the cross. We go back to the foot of the cross, because if we're talking about getting out of our comfort zone in order to reach others, if we're talking about doing church perhaps with extra manpower than seems necessary at times, or perhaps in a way that might seem inconvenient to us at times, really, where do we get the drive for that from? Isn't it from what Jesus did for us? Because if we're going to talk about going out of a comfort zone in order to reach people, isn't that what Jesus did? Isn't that what has gripped our hearts? That he could have said, you know what, I like it here in heaven. I've got everything. But instead, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. He said, you know what, I am willing to go. And I'm willing to be incredibly uncomfortable. I'm willing to be, in some ways, restricted into humanity. I'm willing to experience not just, you know, the plush palaces, but I'm willing to be born and laid in a manger and have nowhere to call my own. And I'm willing to be mistreated and misunderstood and dismissed and spat upon and beaten and hurt and ultimately killed, dying not just any death, but even death on a cross. Jesus was willing to go the longest distance possible in order to reach people. When he went to the cross, Hebrews tells us it was for the joy set before him that he endured that. He went through that. And I don't say that to kind of somehow make us feel bad. I say that to make us feel amazed. What he did for me is just astonishing. And no matter how many millions of hymns are written, we'll never find the words to ultimately express how grateful we are. Isn't that true? Just how far he went, just how much he did. And now we're the body of Christ. And so we get to represent him. We get to be uncomfortable. We get to do things that maybe we might not prefer, but in comparison, it's nothing. But it's worth it because he's worth it. It's worth it because for one person to come to know Jesus and to have their eternity transformed is worth it. And that's what being a part of this church does. It's just such an encouragement to me. I struggle evangelistically. I struggle in conversations to bring it round and point people to Jesus. I find that really hard. I get all sweaty and tongue-tied. You wouldn't believe it, but I do. But I tell you, I love being part of this church. It's one of the greatest joys of my life because this church is far more effective at reaching people than I am. And I just get to be part of it. And so what we're going to do, I'm going to pray and ask God to help us to, however far we've gone already, to go even further in representing him to others that we might see some get saved. No guarantees. Can't get everyone. We want to get more people to know Jesus. And I'm going to give him thanks for the cross, for dying for us, for going that extreme length for us, because that's what grabs our hearts. That's what stirs us, and that's what motivates us as we head into our week.